Here and now, and it's Election Day 2004, and it's already making history. Polling stations around the country are seeing unprecedented traffic. The Supreme Court has already weighed in on a controversial issue, and with polls showing incumbent President George Bush and challenger John Kerry in a virtual tie, both candidates are taking the unusual step of Election Day campaigning. John Kerry visited Wisconsin and will spend the rest of the day in Boston. We'll check in on his campaign in a moment. George Bush is in Ohio today. Ohio State House News Service reporter Bill Cohen is there as well in Columbus, and he joins us. Bill, let's get right to the news today. It came early this morning regarding challengers at polling places. As we reported here yesterday, two federal judges banned challengers in polling places, but last night an appeals court overruled that decision, said challengers could challenge voters today, and that decision stays because the Supreme Court was pulled in. It ruled it won't hear the case. So what does all of this mean in Ohio? Who wins? Who loses?
Well, it's a victory for Republicans. They're the ones who wanted to have monitors at the polling places to challenge voters who they thought might really not be eligible to vote. The Republicans insist they're not going to be confronting voters directly, but they are going to be talking to polling place judges and perhaps raise some questions about a few voters. The Democrats say, well, they didn't really like the idea of the Republicans being there, but they said, well, if the Republicans are going to be there, the Democrats were going to have their own monitors to make sure people were not disenfranchised.
Which creates this image, Bill. I'm thinking these poor voters, individuals surrounded by camera crews, lawyers, and partisan challengers. What is the scene there?
Well, we haven't really seen a lot of that. Instead, what we really have seen, though, are just long lines at many polling places. I don't think because of a lot of challenges and not because of TV crews mucking things up, but just because there are a lot of people out there trying to vote, even though there has been a steady rain, at least here in Columbus. I talked with some folks at a polling place in a low-income neighborhood near downtown, and someone had been standing in line for more than an hour, and they said they were willing to wait even longer. Here's one woman. Her name was Teresa Caldwell.
My family is from the Old South, and we were brought up to appreciate the struggles of our people to just get a chance to vote, and I'm not about to let my people down by not voting, so I'll be here for the duration.
That's a powerful statement, Bill. And now we know that President Bush is in Ohio as well. I imagine his campaign is more about getting out the vote at this point than changing someone's mind on a vote.
Yes, you're right. And I think he's really just trying to send the signal that, hey, he cares about Ohio with the seventh largest block of electoral votes. In fact, this morning, the Bush campaign wouldn't even tell us where Bush was going to be. We were told that, in general, the public isn't even going to know where he's going to be, and they were even just simply going to assign a few pool reporters to cover the event. So I guess the idea wasn't really to make a big splash, but just to get out the word, hey, President Bush is here on Election Day, and he cares about Ohio.
Bill Cohen is with the Ohio State House News Bureau. He spoke to us from Columbus. Bill, thanks so much.
Thank you.
Well, we're going to hopscotch around the country in a moment, but first we want to turn to Warren Ritchie. He's legal affairs correspondent for the Christian Science Monitor. He's in Washington, D.C., and Warren, we spoke many times during the Florida election recount of 2000. Here we are 4 years later. We just heard about the decision in Ohio. How big a factor do you think partisan challengers are going to be at the polls?
Well, you know, it really depends on how close the election is, and specifically how close it is in particular jurisdictions. Because if the election isn't close, these challenges will go away. You will not see litigation. But if there's a possibility that litigation can somehow capture enough votes to close the gap, then you will see litigation and you will see it like nothing we saw in 2000.
Well, in fact, and when a vote is challenged, let's say somebody shows up at a wrong precinct or a challenger has a list and that voter's name is on the list, that voter in most states will be given a provisional ballot, which gets vetted later. Let's turn to those provisional ballots. It varies state to state on how they can be used, but you think these are a big factor.
That's right. It sets the groundwork for litigation that could decide if it is very close in a state. The whole idea of provisional ballots is if there's a problem at the polling place, the voter will get an opportunity to cast a ballot, but it'll be a provisional ballot. It'll be kind of a second-class ballot, but it'll be a vote. And then there must be a determination of whether or not whether that voter was eligible to vote and whether that vote should be counted. That will take place after Election Day, which makes this whole election process much more murky, because there will be a group of votes that we will not know which way they go until after the election.
And how long after, by the way? I heard by some accounts 3 weeks.
It depends on the individual jurisdiction. Some of the states will try to clear this up very quickly, but some of them won't be able to. And there's another factor: overseas absentee ballots and military votes.
Right.
At a time when there is a war going on, some of these votes will not come in right away and be counted on election day.
And we know that there's a lot of irregularities there, too. Some absentee ballots never arrived. We know that in Pennsylvania, for instance, Ralph Nader was ruled off the absentee ballot, but the ballots had already gone out. So there's a lot of confusion there.
This sets the stage for litigation. If Pennsylvania is close, that issue will go to the courts.
Yeah.
The same thing in Florida. Military ballots will not be counted until or can be accepted 10 days after the election, as long as they're postmarked on election day. And so the question then becomes, well, how are you going to look at those ballots? Will you examine them very strictly and strike any ballot that, that hasn't crossed all the T's and dotted all the I's? Or will you take a more expansive view?
Warren, I've got a quick question I want to ask you in just the few seconds we have. I know we're going to revisit this, but as we know, the Supreme Court has already stepped in. Chief Justice William Rehnquist, a Republican-appointed conservative judge, did not return to work yesterday. There's speculation that his health might prohibit him from returning at all. What does that mean? And again, just a brief thought. If there's a question about this election and the court has to decide.
Well, he can work from home and he can vote as long as he stays up to date on the issue. But
if he's out of the picture, it could be a 4-4 court.
Well, if he were to die before the election is decided, then it would be a 4-4 court. And what that means is that whatever the lower court decision was prior to reaching the high court would stand if the justices split 4-4. Mm. There is one other possibility. And that some analysts think is highly unlikely, but the president, President Bush, even in the event that he was losing, could appoint, use a recess appointment and appoint a new justice to the Supreme Court.
Well, Warren Ritchie, I know we're going to be talking to you again. Thank you so much.
Yeah, thank you.
Warren Ritchie is a legal affairs correspondent for the Christian Science Monitor. We'll keep an eye on those stories. Well, Senator John Kerry also campaigned today, making an appearance in Wisconsin. He ended his cross-country travels, arriving by jet at Hanscom Air Force Base just outside of Boston. And here now is Athena Desai is there as well. Athena, first of all, was there a greeting party? And what are the senator's plans today?
Actually, it was not an open event. So besides the press and state troopers, Boston Police, and Secret Service, there's no one else here to welcome Kerry home. But he is going to head home, apparently. He does have a house on Beacon Hill, and his precinct for voting is State House. So that's next on the list. And then I think after that, the Union Oyster House is not far from the State House. It's the oldest restaurant in continuous service in the United States, and it used to be a favorite of John F. Kennedy. There's a booth with his name on it there, and it said that booth and a stool at the Daniel Webster Oyster Bar bring Kerry some luck.
Well,
the word is he'll be having some lunch there.
He's very superstitious. He has to have his chowder and oysters on election day at the
Apparently.
Union Oyster House. Well, tonight there's a big event being planned in the middle of Boston later in the evening. That is open to the public.
That is open to the public. There are some scheduled performers, including possibly Jon Bon Jovi, Sheryl Crow, the Black Eyed Peas, James Taylor. Kerry himself, though, probably wouldn't make an appearance before 11 p.m., but he will remain in Boston to take in the returns and see what happens.
And it's going to be a heavy rain, but they expect a heavy turnout, thousands of people. And it seems like part of sort of putting an imprint on the night, no matter which way the night is going, because who knows what will happen.
Exactly. I think they're expecting between 10,000 to 30,000 people, with the entertainers. Who knows if more arrive. Traffic is basically going to be at a standstill, as expected by Boston Police, and
Well, it's been that, as you know, Athena, it's been that way for 2 weeks anyway because of the Red Sox. Athena Desai reporting for Here and Now from outside of Boston. Athena, thank you.
Thank you.
Well, now we turn to Florida, which could be, well, the Florida of 2004. President George Bush won that state by 0.01%, giving the Republicans their victory in the last election. Early polls show the president with a very small lead over John Kerry, but election watchers say it, you know, could go either way. Pat Duggins is news director at WMFE Public Radio in Orlando, Florida. And Pat, at the polls this morning, what's going on?
Well, right now we're just kind of keeping our fingers crossed that Jay Leno doesn't get to eat our lunch again like it happened back in the year 2000 with all those hanging and dimpled chads. The big concern right now for South Florida is all of the new high-tech touch screens that they're using for the balloting. Because the problem is, if it's a really, really close race, there are critics out there that say that that kind of a newfangled system can't provide the paper trail necessary in order to do a recount. So as Orange County's election supervisor said, it doesn't matter who wins, please just win big.
Right. The lack of a paper trail could be the hanging chad of 2004.
Absolutely. And that's something that apparently nobody in the state legislature noticed until the very end. And while you've got that going on, we also have international observers in Orange County, including two sitting members of Belgium's parliament who are really concerned about the way Florida handles its early voting.
Well, you know, Pat, you have to go back 120 years to have two elections in a row that are this contentious. How are Floridians reacting to that? I mean, obviously they're aware of the spotlight on them. Is it sending them to the polls, making them stay home? What's happening?
The reaction to early voting was just incredible. Here in Orange County, we had about like 200,000 people who cast their ballots early. And if you go alongside the I-4 corridor, which goes between Daytona Beach to Orlando to Tampa, that virtually accounts for all of the extra new voters who have registered between now and the year 2000. So there's a lot of interest, a lot of people stealing George Bush or John Kerry signs out of people's yards. Mm. A lot of folks are very, very fired up, and we'll just have to wait and see how it goes. I mean, as far as the election supervisors are concerned, up until 7 o'clock, anybody who's in line after that, everybody gets to vote, so they're expecting a really, really long night.
We're going to talk to the voter hotline later in the program to find out where the calls are coming in from and what the concerns are, but we already know that the most calls are coming from Broward County. Are you surprised at that?
Well, no, to be honest with you. It was very contentious back in the year 2000. It is again now. I mean, we're getting anecdotal reports over in Lake County, for example, just west of Orlando, that somebody, and this is according to the sheriff deputies out there, someone's calling Democratic voters and telling them to go to a different polling spot, and now everybody's saying big conspiracy theory going on there, too. So it's going to be another interesting day, and probably, I mean, no one is really, you know, betting the farm that we're even going to know who's president tomorrow. So heaven only knows when this is going to get resolved.
Yeah, there are reports across the country of voters calling on behalf of the Kerry campaign saying that he is for gay marriage. He is not. Or that Schwarzkopf is for Kerry. He is not. So apparently there's a lot of false campaigning and recorded phone calls going out today as well. Pat Duggins, news director for WMFE, NPR Public Radio in Orlando, Florida. Pat, as usual, thanks so much.
No trouble at all. Call anytime.
Remember the locked box you found in West Palm Beach 4 years ago? I'm remembering back to conversations we've had. We'll have more. Just ahead, the other stuff on the ballot questions, some of the issues that are bringing out the vote as well, and later, that voter hotline. It's very busy. There's more coming up here and now. I'm Robin Young. It's Here and Now, continuing our Election Day 2004 coverage with a quick stop in Pennsylvania. The Keystone State could be the key to the election, and it also has the potential to leave election officials with quite a headache. In the most recent polls, 4% of Pennsylvanians are still undecided, and when they make up their minds, they could help decide the entire election. Dennis Roddy is a columnist with the Pittsburgh Post-Gazette. Dennis, what's happening at the polling stations there?
Well, there's been a lot of excitement in the early going. I think that each side came into this with its back up, expecting all manner of hijinks. There certainly were some leading up to the election. Voters on each side getting bogus calls, Republicans in the center of the state getting calls saying that their registrations were invalid, not to bother to come to the polls. Democrats on this side of the state getting calls saying that because of the overwhelming turnout, they split it over 2 days. Republicans will vote November 2nd. Democrats should come to the polls November 3rd. Neither side seems to have fallen for it. Today, much excitement and much ado about nothing in Philadelphia, where there was this report that a collection of voting machines turned up at polling places with hundreds of votes already cast on them. Drudge led with this with a flashing siren symbol on the top. Everybody jumped all over it. And when Lynn Abraham, the district attorney, arrived, she discovered there are two counters on these machines. One counts the votes taken during the election that date, simply registers them. The other lists the number of votes ever cast on the machine. So somebody was looking at the wrong counter on this.
Boy, Dennis, you have painted quite a picture for us. Quick question, and I have to be brief here, but there's a new law in Pennsylvania dictating when a recount can be called and when one is automatically called.
Within a half percentage difference, recount is automatic in Pennsylvania now, yes.
Okay. Dennis Roddy, a columnist with the Pittsburgh Post-Gazette, thank you so much.
Pleasure to be with you.
Well, besides the top-of-the-ticket votes for president, senator, or representative, there are the ballot measures. 34 states have 164 questions on their ballots, and there are countless more at the local level, everything from non-binding resolutions on the war in Iraq to South Carolina's decision on whether or not to stop serving liquor from those little single-serve bottles. Well, joining us now is Lewis Jacobson. He's a deputy editor of Roll Call Newspaper. He also covers ballot initiatives for the Rothenberg Political Report. Lewis, what are the most common ballot measures you're seeing as you scan the landscape across the country?
Certainly the most common ones this year have to include same-sex marriage barriers. Those are on the ballot in 11 states, and most are expected to pass. Most are in states which George Bush has already expected to win anyway. There are three which are in states which could be considered swing states, including Oregon, Michigan, and also Arkansas.
Okay, let's move on. Gambling?
Gambling is all over the place, as it has been in the past several cycles. It is seen as a way to raise money for the state budget, and it certainly is getting tried in lots of new places.
An issue that's been on the campaign trail and is showing up as a ballot question, tort reform.
Tort reform, very big. You basically have big companies and trial lawyers battling it out. In some cases, companies put things on the ballot. In some cases, trial lawyers did, and they are going to fight a death match in about five or six states this year.
Yeah, we've got California, Colorado, Florida, Nevada, Oregon, and Wyoming. And Nevada's going to ask about limits on attorney fees, so people will be watching that closely.
Definitely.
Stem cell research, big question in California.
Stem cell research, definitely a big question. It's a big budget proposal for 10 years. I believe it's about $350 million per year. It's basically a way that certain voters there who sponsored this tried to get this onto the national agenda at a time when they believe that the Bush administration is not trying to push that too far.
The California question, if approved, would authorize state bonds to create the California Institute for Regenerative Medicine.
Correct.
It would provide funding to universities. Also in California, they're looking to soften their three strikes and you're out law. But at Rothenberg, at the Rothenberg Political Report, I know that you have a different top 10 list from the ones that we just mentioned.
Yes. Several of those are indeed on my top 10 list. I basically choose the ones which I think are most interesting. Certainly immigration. There is a ballot initiative in Arizona which would discourage illegal immigration, basically requiring proof of citizenship to receive public services and voting. That's a very contested one there. Most of the state sort of political establishment, GOP and Democratic alike, is dead set against it, but it's got a lot of grassroots support and could well pass.
Mm. And give us another one that's caught your eye.
Something else that caught my eye is a fairly obscure ballot initiative in Colorado, which would basically force public utilities to generate 10% of their energy from wind, solar, and other renewable energies by 2015. I haven't seen any recent polls, but the ones in early October did have it winning by a fairly big margin, which was somewhat of a surprise to me. It's really never been tried on the ballot before, as far as I can tell, and it certainly could fall victim to a late ad campaign by folks who are opposed to it. But it has done fairly well up to this point and could well pass.
Mm. You know what caught my eye? Up in Maine, they're considering a question that would make it a crime to hunt bears with bait.
Yeah. In fact, it's been over the past 10, 12 years, folks in the animal rights community have been very successful in getting voters to back ballot initiatives on things such as bear baiting, wolf trapping, various other things. And their record is one of the best, actually, of any kind of group in this field.
Which do you think is the most important question on the ballot?
Certainly number one has to be Colorado's Electoral College reform, just because it could be so crucial to deciding who wins today.
Yeah. Lewis, we're going to talk more about the Electoral College later in the program, and we'll talk about that Colorado referendum, which would award its electoral votes on a proportional rather than winner-take-all basis. They might split them right down the middle. We'll talk more about that. But the questions on the ballot, some are put on by citizens, some are put on by legislature, some are binding, some aren't. There's just a potpourri. I'm wondering, As you went and voted today, did you see anything that was very local that struck you?
Well, I voted, and there were three local measures on my ballot. They were all placed on the ballot by the county council, I believe.
Yeah. In Cambridge, they have a question that's non-binding. It asks for a statement that war can be waged without violating human rights or civil rights. It's quite, you know, very Canterbridgean, and so
yes.
It becomes very local at times as
yes.
well. Louis Jacobson, deputy editor of Roll Call Newspaper, thanks so much for speaking with us.
Thank you.
And this note, we've heard lots about balloting issues in some of the hotly contested states, but Florida and Ohio are not alone. In New Jersey, a judge has ruled that that state can use electronic voting machines, rejecting another suit that found those same machines unreliable. And in the Carolinas, as many as 60,000 people may be registered to vote in both South and North Carolina. An investigation by the Charlotte Observer found that nearly 200 people voted in both states 4 years ago. Stay with us. More ahead here and now. I'm Robin Young. It's Here and Now. A few weeks ago, 17 states were considered battlegrounds, but now it's Election Day and we're down to a handful that might in fact decide this election. For the past several weeks, Here and Now's Bob Oakes has been talking with analysts from several battleground states, and he joins me now to talk about the changing landscape. Hi, Bob.
Hi, Robin.
And throughout your conversations over the past few weeks, we heard from many of these analysts that the get-out-the-vote effort is what's going to make the difference today. Is that still key?
I think there's no question about it. Most of the national polls show Kerry and Bush within a couple of points of each other within the margin of error. Some have Bush on top, others Kerry, which means that it's all ground game today in the battleground states. If you, the candidate, can get more shoe leather on the ground in the form of people going to the polls for you, you have a better shot at winning in that location or maybe pulling an upset.
And we're hearing stories of busloads of volunteers, you know, crossing borders, going into states where each party feels that they need this help, you know, as you said, the shoe leather on the ground.
There are some issues, Robin, state issues that could prove to be wild cards today. In Michigan, for example, a ban on same-sex marriage is attracting conservatives. In Arizona, an immigration question that calls for public agencies to require proof of citizenship in order to provide services is also bringing some conservatives to the polls today.
What about the issue of the war in Iraq? I mean, you know, we know it's been divisive and polarizing, but is it sending people to the polls as well?
Well, you know, for many Americans, the war is the reason to head for the polls today. For Bush, against Bush, for Kerry, against Kerry. Here's what our state-by-state analyst told us. In Wisconsin, many voters feel that the war is a plus for the president. In Iowa, 15 Iowans died in the war, and approval there is not as strong. In Colorado, the feeling is the war has hurt the president. In Michigan, it was mixed, with the economy being a bigger issue for voters there, given the unemployment issue.
Yeah. You mentioned Wisconsin. I have cousins in Wauwatosa, and they say they can't answer their phone anymore or turn on the TV because they're being so barraged with ads there. So, you know, obviously the parties are aiming for those states. What about the debate? I mean, are people still, you know, are people...
The what?
Okay.
The debates, I think, for most people seem like ancient history. It feels like it happened so long ago in the campaign, and so much has happened since then. And I think for most people, the debates don't mean much at all. Our analysts pretty much told us that Kerry was stronger in the debates, especially the first, but I think there's a real question about whether the effect of the debates lasts. And in the end, it probably probably doesn't, or they probably don't translate into many votes.
Yeah, it does feel to be very in the moment today. In fact, what are the key states as we know them today, and how are the candidates reacting to them?
A look at where the candidate's last stop is a pretty good indicator of where they think they need to do well, or the states they're worried about, I suppose. Bush in Ohio, Kerry in Wisconsin. There are six states now that most analysts are keying on. Three rich in electoral votes, three just as important, just not as vote rich. Ohio, Florida, Pennsylvania, the big three. The wisdom is that the winner of two of the three will be tough to beat, but here's why it's tough to call. In Ohio, differing late polls have both Kerry and Bush on top, same in Pennsylvania, and Florida today is just called a total toss-up. But if the candidate who wins only one of the big three sweeps the other three, Iowa, Wisconsin, Minnesota, that could offset. And pre-election day polls there showed Bush might be marginally ahead in Iowa, but way too close for comfort. The same for Kerry in Minnesota, and the various final Wisconsin polls show both men ahead.
Yeah.
All of these are razor-thin races, and this uncertainty is why some analysts predict a rerun of the 2000 presidential race with the winner not clear for some time after today. It's why the Bush and Kerry campaigns have sent thousands of lawyers to battleground states anticipating legal challenges. I spoke with election law expert Heather Gerken, who's an assistant professor of Harvard University. She says there are several issues that the lawyers will be reviewing.
Well, there are several types of problems. One has to do simply with the technology that's being used. A lot of states, believe it or not, are still using punch card balloting or even more antiquated systems. So that's certainly a concern. There's also concerns on both sides about all of these people who've registered to vote this year for the first time. So on the Democrat side, they're worried about newly registered voters getting confused, not knowing where their polling place is, not knowing how the voting system works. And on the Republican side, they're worried about vote fraud. And then finally, everyone is worried about the question of provisional ballots. Provisional ballots are the ones that you file if you come to the polling place and you're told, I'm sorry, you're not on the list, or something that happened to about 4 million voters last election in 2000. You can cast a provisional ballot, which means you can cast a ballot that will count if it turns out it was a mistake not to have you on the voting list.
And to add to the confusion, the states are differing on whether or not they're going to consider all the provisional ballots or only if the voters who are already confused cast those provisional ballots in the proper precinct.
That's exactly right. There's already an ongoing legal war about just that question in the battleground states. And the courts are divided on the question.
All right. And let's go back to, if we can, your first point, and that is the kind of voting that's going to take place. I think that many of our listeners will be quite surprised to hear that tanging chads could again be an issue in this campaign.
Well, it really is astonishing. 32 million people will vote with punch cards for this election. 70% of Ohio voters will be voting on punch cards. That's an astonishing statement given the trouble that we had in Florida and given that Congress was supposed to have fixed this problem with the Help America Vote Act.
And there's also some confusion and concern over the new electronic voting systems that have been put into place in some polling places around the nation. The concerns whether local election officials and, of course, voters are technically competent to run them. And that's aside from the fact of whether there might be software questions.
That's exactly right. There are going to be 50 million people approximately voting on electronic voting machines. And because there was such delay in purchasing those machines, a lot of them will be doing it for the first time. So we're very likely to see the sort of dress rehearsal to have a lot of problems in it. People won't know how to work the machines. They won't know how to get them booted up. And that's not even addressing the deeper question about the distrust voters have for these machines, because they don't provide a paper trail, and this seem like something that's easy to use to fix an election.
So the big question for the candidates and, of course, the parties is whether the problems will be so substantial that they throw into question this presidential election.
Well, I have to say, Bob, if the polls stay as close as they are right now, I think it is highly unlikely that we will wake up on November 3rd and know who our president is.
If that prediction is right, do you think that in the 4 years between now and the next presidential election, there'll be a big push across the nation to get rid of the Electoral College system?
That's a very interesting question. I think that if Kerry should win the Electoral College while Bush wins the national vote, just the reverse of what happened last election, there may be an opportunity for Republicans and Democrats to agree upon just how silly the Electoral College system is in a democracy that considers itself to be majoritarian.
Heather Gerken is an election law expert and assistant law professor at Harvard University. She was speaking to Here and Now's Bob Oakes. Bob, it's going to be a long night.
We've got the no-dos handy.
Yes, and we're going to have more on the Electoral College in just a moment. You're listening to Here and Now. The Washington Post counts 33 different scenarios in which battleground states could line up so that the Electoral College system could again show its quirks. In one scenario, the Electoral College is tied tomorrow morning, and one of the electors defects, swinging the election to Kerry. Well, here to explain all this is Thomas Mann. He's senior fellow at the Brookings Institution in Washington, D.C. Hi, Tom.
Hi, how are you?
I'm good. Let's have the primer first. Each state has the same number of Electoral College electors as the state has congresspeople. When voters pick a presidential candidate, they're also backing the electors that their candidate has lined up. Those electors are expected to vote the same way as the popular vote. It takes 270 electors to win the presidency, and they largely are symbolically voting in December. Have I got that right?
You got it.
Okay. Well, now what happens if no candidate wins that majority of electors? Let's say tomorrow George Bush and John Kerry have 269 electors each.
Well, then Americans are going to discover something about their Constitution that they don't know about now. Namely, the backup system for election is given to the U.S. House of Representatives. Voting by state delegation with each state, whether it's Rhode Island or Vermont on the one hand, or California or Texas on the other, having a single vote.
Right.
And it takes a majority of state delegations to elect a president.
And we understand that the House picks the president, but then the Senate picks the vice president, and we know the balance is different in each, but essentially does that mean that you could have a President Bush and a Vice President Edwards?
You sure could. If the new Senate, after the elections are tallied, produces a Democratic majority, then you could, and if each senator voted his party as opposed to voting how his state cast its popular vote, then Senator Edwards could win.
Or vice versa, as they say.
Yes.
And now to the story out of West Virginia that has fascinated me. It asks the question, can electors defect from that popular vote, from what it's considered their job to do? One elector, the mayor of South Charleston, West Virginia, says that he will not vote for President Bush no matter which way the state's popular vote goes. In other words, even if his state, West Virginia, votes overwhelmingly for Bush to have a second term, he is not going to cast his elector vote that way.
Yes, he's signaling in advance that he would be a so-called faithless elector. We've had 10 such faithless electors over the course of American history in which 20,000 plus electoral votes have been cast. None have really altered the outcome of the election.
But this one might, right, with such a close race?
It's conceivable that it could. I'm a little surprised that the West Virginia Republican Party hasn't intervened to bounce him off the list of Bush electors and replace him with someone else, because the power to appoint electors, nominate electors, if you will, lies with the state parties for the most part.
Right. Well, we'll keep an eye on that one. And it is legal, we should say. He has that discretion. But there's another question. The Electoral College vote is split proportionally in just two states right now. That's Maine and Nebraska. In other words, they could split their votes depending on the popular vote. Colorado is also considering splitting votes. It's a referendum question, and it would be retroactive to this election. But that means it could turn out that instead of a state deciding the election, it could be just one congressional district.
In fact, the second congressional district of Maine is being hotly contested by both candidates and parties. Last election in 2000, Gore carried the state of Maine, but the second district he carried only by 2%. So the Bush team is fighting for that single electoral vote.
Well, you know, Thomas Mann, some people embrace and love our peculiar way of voting. Time magazine shows that 56% of Americans want to abolish it. We'll see how they feel tomorrow if that number increases or not. Thomas Mann, presidential scholar at the Brookings Institution in Washington, D.C., thank you as always.
Happy to be with you.
Stay with us. There's more ahead here and now. I'm Robin Young. It's Here and Now. A reliable source tells us that reporters who want to cover the president's election night bash in Washington tonight, if there is one, have to fork over $300 for a seat to watch it on TV, and another $200 on top of that if they want to eat. Our reliable source is Richard Leiby. He writes the Reliable Source gossip column for The Washington Post. He joins us on the line from the Capitol. Rich, are you paying $500?
Well, Robin, unfortunately, our budget doesn't allow it. We will have a representative there who's going to fork over the dough. And by the way, that doesn't buy you a phone line either, nor internet access. And incidentally, if you go to the party, you're not allowed to talk to anyone. Those are the ground rules.
Woo, whoopee. Well, you know, we were hearing about plans here in Boston to have big festivities in the middle of town to await the election returns. Are there plans in D.C.? Is there such a thing as a big party? I'm wondering because, you know, it's the White House. What do they do?
Well, the Bush party is the president's party tonight at the Reagan building, and it's virtually unprecedented that such restrictions would be put on coverage. I'm going to be going to a couple of lounges around town that are hosting Rock the Vote festivities, and nobody's asking for any money for me to cover them. Those seem to be skewing Democratic and young. And so my plan is to go out and go where I'm wanted. Now, you know, but the other side of this is it plays to the GOP base to exclude reporters because it's part of the elite media bashing that's been going on for years by this administration.
Well, if there's a clear winner tomorrow, and, you know, most bets are that there isn't going to be one, but if there is, and even if it's, like, touchy, what happens in D.C.? Is there a social scene shift?
Well, currently, the election has sucked all the air out of Washington. I mean, everybody who's really engaged is out on the road. The only people left are a few pundits sort of in their lairs coming out to talk on shows like this. But what will happen in the future is they'll have to put Prozac in the water, I think, to reengage a social scene. This town is so divided socially and politically that you don't really find Democrats and Republicans mixing anymore.
Well, in fact, you read a survey today that asked consumers to liken John Kerry and George Bush to popular brands. Can you give us a sense of what you got back?
Yes. It wasn't my survey. It was by a PR company that found the consumers liken Kerry to a BMW and Starbucks, and Bush to Folgers Coffee and Ford. So there you sort of see a cultural divide in terms of consumer products, old, reliable, dependable versus new and upscale. So this election may just be about getting somebody new in.
And Richard, with just a couple seconds we have left with you, I'm curious. It always feels that after these huge, long campaigns, couples emerge. I'm wondering if you have any you can alert us to.
You mean another Madeline Carville type?
Yeah, like that.
Well, we're seeing some sort of offbeat media liaison. Rush Limbaugh has been dating a CNN anchor. We're seeing Dan Senor, the former Baghdad spinner, dating somebody at NBC. So maybe it's the media Republican access somehow coming together, patching things up, and making nice.
Richard Leiby writes the Reliable Source gossip column for The Washington Post, a must-read for those inside the Beltway and out. Richard, thanks so much.
Thank you, Robin.
And have fun tonight.
Thanks.
Where you're invited. Well, now for a last-minute check-in on what voters are saying and the problems they're encountering at polling places, we turn to Shelley Pingree. She's president of Common Cause. They've set up a voting hotline for people with questions and concerns. And that number, by the way, is 1-866-MY-VOTE-1. 1-866-MY-VOTE-1. And Shelley, when people dial that number, what kinds of calls are you getting? What are they saying?
Well, so far we've received over 140,000 calls. Some of the people are just looking for where their polling place is. Some want to be connected to an elections official, and then others are giving us 60 seconds of a story about what happened to them. I would say the most common call is someone saying that they attempted to receive an absentee ballot and it never came. Next are people who go to the polling place and their names aren't on the voter lists. Some of them have been registered for years and they find that their name isn't there. Then we're finding people who experience problem with the machines, particularly with the punch card ballots, people who are concerned that they used an electronic voting machine and they don't know if their vote was counted, and then people who say they've been standing in long lines. This started days ago with the early voting, and I suppose the good news is that many people have reported to us that they've stood in line for as much as 3 hours. They are highly motivated to vote, and they are getting in there and voting.
Yeah.
Now, in some places, we're seeing things that may be more behavior that concerns us, people in some places who have told us about people running through the lines and asking to check their IDs in places where it's not appropriate. Students have been not allowed to vote, not allowed to use provisional ballots. One of the worst reports we got was in Deerfield Beach, Florida, where at the corner of Green and Third, someone had put up a sign that said, if you have any traffic violations and you go to vote, you will be arrested.
Which is, of course, not true.
Absolutely not true, but there is a significant amount of reporting of voter intimidation, particularly in the targeted states, Pennsylvania, Ohio, Florida. Flyers have been sent out telling people that they may have been registered to vote illegally, that if anyone in their family ever convicted of crime, even a misdemeanor, they will be arrested or fined when they go into the polls. In Pennsylvania, senior citizens have gotten calls that have told them that their registration has expired, and in some places they're passing out flyers that say, for Democrats, November 3rd is the actual day to go vote.
Yeah. Well, then we've heard some odd stories. An election judge in Maryland left a polling place briefly because he said he forgot something back at the house. He left. The Detroit Free Press is reporting that police officers were called to keep order at a polling place in a church there. Apparently, four poll watchers from the Republican Party were asking people for their names as they checked in to vote. Is that allowed?
Well, there's a certain amount that can be done in a polling place. You are required to state your name loud enough so that the people who are observing the elections, poll monitors, can record that data. But we have heard a lot of stories of challenges that are being done on issues that people shouldn't be challenged for, people feeling intimidated by the challengers who are saying to people that they're not rightfully on the voter list. There's a significant amount going on with the challenging of voters. And each state has different rules, so it gets very confusing for people.
So you need to educate yourself before you go. But, you know, Shelley, I want to ask you one question. Our colleague Renee Loth, writing in the Boston Globe, wrote that, you know, there's always been a lot of problems. It's not perfect. It's not a perfect system. And the fact that now there's lawyers and the press and so much light shining on this, I mean, do you worry that, you know, people will expect perfection and that can't happen?
Well, let's just remember that this is the United States, that we spend a lot of time going to countries all over the world and observing their election. All eyes are on us to make sure we won a fair and appropriate election. And after the election of 2000, people, rightfully so, raised their concerns about what should be appropriate when you vote in this country and what should be legal. Congress passed the Help America Vote Act. The idea was that it would fix many of the problems of 2000. But the truth is they dropped the ball. They didn't fully fund it. Many of these polling places just are inadequately staff, they don't have sufficiently trained poll workers, and many of the questions around provisional ballots or ID requirements were left up to the states for their interpretation, and I don't think you can put that genie back in the bottle. I agree that we've had a lot of problems in this country, but it doesn't make it right, and this level of awareness shows that people, they want to vote, and they want to make sure their vote is counted, and in a close election like this, you can't take that too lightly.
So, I guess in the meantime, stand your ground, bring your ID, go to the right polling place, make sure you demand your rights, and if you got a problem, call. One of the numbers, 1-866-MY-VOTE-1. Shelley has people on the end of that line, and they'll try to help you out. Shelley Pingree, thanks so much.
And let me give you one other number.
Real quick.
1-866-OUR-VOTE. There are lawyers standing by. You can also get help there.
Okay. Shelley Pingree, president of Common Cause. Thanks so much.
Thank you.
Touch back with you.
Bye-bye.
For more information on the Voter Alert Hotline and other numbers, check out our website, here-now.org. Here Now is a production of WBUR Boston. I'm Robin Young. Get into your radio, get into your polling place, and join us again here and now. For a cassette or CD of Here and Now, go to our website, here-now.org, or call 1-800-909-9287. Cassettes or CDs are $15 each, which includes shipping and handling.
Funding for Here and Now comes from the MathWorks, creators of MATLAB and Simulink technical computing software, on the web at mathworks.com.
I'm Robin.